In 2015, proponents of open access for scholarly publishing seem to be pushing at an open door. Publishers around the world have adopted a wide range of OA practices, from green to gold, hybrids and pure plays. Today, open access business models are a fact of life. Yet, open access raises important, sometimes unexpected challenges for all stakeholders. With OA, the next wave, scholarly publishing is moving beyond a single-issue focus on article processing charges to address end-to-end solutions that engage authors throughout the workflow. Collaboration, competition, commitment. The next wave of open access will put each to the test. Surviving and thriving requires technology and best practices that deliver quality author experience, manage workflows, and coordinate compliance reporting. Good morning and welcome again to the Frankfurt Book Fair and Copyright Clearance Center's Town Meeting, our third annual such event that brings authors, funders, institutions, and publishers together for a lively, informative, and open exchange, appropriately for a discussion on open access. I'll be asking the panel today, what will the next wave of open access bring to them? I will hopefully ask you that same question, and you're welcome to ask questions of our panel. If you are tweeting the discussion, our hashtag is CCC Open Access. You can follow Copyright Clearance Center at Copyright Clear. And I've got a lot of people on stage, and I want to try to introduce them all quickly and get to the discussion, see if we can do this. Josh Dahl is Head of Publishing and Associations for Thomson Reuters. Agnès Henri is Publishing Director at EDP Sciences in Paris. Sean Harris is Communications Coordinator for INASP. Randy Petway is Executive Vice President, Global Products for Publishing Technology. Immediately to my left here, we have Richard Nguyen from Ares Services. He is the Vice President of Marketing. And we have as well my colleague at Copyright Clearance Center, Haralambos Marmanis, Chief Technology Officer and Vice President of Engineering. Welcome, Babis. And then towards the end there, we have Helen Sun. Helen, welcome, who is Chief Executive Officer of the Beijing Ingenta Digital Publishing Technology Limited Company. She founded that in 2011 in Beijing as a joint venture with the UK-based Publishing Technology PLC. And she was named in 2014 as the Annual Digital Publisher, an award from China Publishers and many other awards. And she's also a researcher working toward a PhD from the Business School of Edinburgh University, as well as in the Editorial and Publishing Studies program at the Communication University of China. And I believe that gets... Oh, and then we do want to also include a very special welcome to our special guest, Mr. Qian Lin, who is the Deputy Vice President at CPNIEC, the China National Publications Import and Export Corporation. It's a mouthful, CNPIEC, but if you're familiar with China and its publishing world, you certainly know them. They are the largest such organization in the People's Republic and a very distinguished group, and very warm welcome to Mr. Lin. I want to get started with Sean Harris. Sean, it's nice to chat with you because I can trust you. You're a former journalist. You're one of my kind, if you will. And so I know you're going to say something fascinating and interesting.
I hope so.
But particularly, Sean, because the group that you're working with now is the UK-based INASP. We'll let you tell people what that stands for. But it is a global network of variety of partners, NGOs, and others who are working to improve access, production, and the use of research information in developing countries. And if there is a story of open access, it's a global story, and it's a story about sharing information. That's the foundation for OA. How is INASP working with perhaps some of the people on this stage and the people in the audience to ensure that that transmission of knowledge isn't simply one way from the north to the south, but also two-way? Tell us briefly about that.
So thank you for that. Actually, I could answer with basically all this time. There's lots to say, but something I feel passionate about is that I think sometimes in conversations in scholarly publishing, we sort of say, oh, yeah, everyone in scholarly publishing is in the room, and actually it's only people from Europe or North America there. And it is a global, research is global. There's researchers everywhere. And we have the privilege of working with some wonderful researchers in many parts of the world, particularly in Sub-Saharan Africa, South Asia, and Latin America.
INASP is it's a mouthful, but INASP is neutral as far as business models, yeah. But open access must be putting some very special pressures on researchers in the Southern Hemisphere, as well as on the publishing communities there too.
Yes, it's. We are, as you say, neutral about business models. We've had good relationships with publishers, many in this room, for the whole lifetime of INASP, which was founded in 92. There are complicated things, particularly for people who are not who don't speak English as a first language, and maybe don't have the infrastructure of senior academics who can guide them in the publication process. In perhaps one of the big buzzwords at the moment is the predatory journals, and this is something we're particularly keen to be guiding people about, and we're one of the founders of the Think Check Submit campaign, which is an exciting campaign to try and help authors to make informed decisions. So that's one aspect. From the other side, we work with local publishers in a range of countries, Nepal, Bangladesh, Latin America, Mongolia, Sri Lanka, yes.
And you've been conducting surveys and sort of trying to understand what their questions are, what their needs are. Mm. And we've spoken on this discussion today at this town meeting about the complications of all of this. It must be exceedingly complicated for them, and in particular to be able to follow through on the mandates and the data requirements.
I think the thing is, it's not a consistent model around the world of how people do open access. I think one of the previous panel discussions said that it's just, we don't know quite what's going to happen in the future, but we don't know, there's not one single thing for a single country. And this is confusing when things are set in the north, in the west, for how things should be done. We've done surveys and found a certain level of confusion about what exactly is meant by these different terms. And it's, as we know from the early days of open access, when it was just let's get things freely available, it's now this whole, some people say, it's not open access if it's not CC BY, or it's not open access if you don't deposit your data, if it's not open access if whatever other structures are in place, which is, I think, a confusing picture.
Right. And Randy Pettway, I see you nodding your head in agreement with what Sean Harris is saying there. And working with the publishers that you do they recognize this challenge that they have with the world beyond their normal scope?
I think they definitely recognize it. But like most of us, you address the things that are of immediate pain point. So, but the problem is you're just deferring the challenges and the pain. So yes, I think they see it, but when it's not at your doorstep every single day, you tend to kind of put it aside. But that's not a strategy for the future. And it creates, as we talked about earlier, there's so many constituents now. More groups matter, and groups that always mattered matter in different ways. So it's become more complex, more interleaved. So to avoid these issues will absolutely come back and cause problems down the road. So
that's right. Well, Babis Marmanis, that's a challenge that we have at Copyright Clearance Center. You're driving the solutions that are coming out of our engineering shop. And you've heard this discussion so far, and you've heard about this notion that the center of power has shifted from publishers being at the center of things, being in control, to beginning to need to share that control with other players in the workflow, the funders, the institutions, and particularly the authors. How is that a technology challenge? Talk about that movement from the established center of power towards other areas, particularly authors, and what kind of a technology challenge that presents.
Yes, so open access is simply a manifestation of the transformative dynamics that exist today in the publishing industry. And that creates both challenges but as well opportunities. Standards, were mentioned earlier are very important, but standards are systems of reference. And so we need standards so that when we talk about something, we can all talk about the same thing. And therefore, adopting standards is very important. However, if you have 100 standards for one thing, then defeats the purpose. Right. So I think that by entity, we need to adopt a single standard and go with it, the whole industry, so that we all know what we're talking about, whether it be authors, institutions, funding, or anything else. With respect to how we approach at CCC, the problem, we've taken a holistic approach, making sure that we can embrace all stakeholders and satisfy everyone's need, not all at the same time. We do prioritize, but we do have a comprehensive approach in accomplishing that.
And that holistic approach, as you call it, where all things are one in a way, is going to get there's a drive, as we heard, towards simplifying things. But before we get there, it's going to get more complicated because we're going to see new technologies, new services, and so really starting on the right foot becomes critical.
Yes, that's correct. And right now, in order to accommodate the plethora of licensing types, business models, and even the complexity of a diverse ecosystem is quite challenging if that's not what you do for a living. And that's what this is the reason that Copyright Clearance Center is providing a solution to the market that can address a lot of these complexities without the burden on the publisher side, and frankly, with ease of use from the author side.
Right. In our last discussion, Richard Wynn, we were talking at the end about return on investment and recognizing that what's being asked of publishers is frankly a great deal. There's a lot that they need to do now they didn't have to do before. In the old subscription world, you sold a subscription that was done at the end of the year, you renewed the subscription. I'm simplifying, I know, for anyone in the audience, but that's how it was. And today we have a much more complicated world, multiple authors, various players in the marketplace. Talk about the drive to ROI and how publishers are seeking a competitive advantage as well.
Yeah, I think things are definitely changing. I was talking to one of the first and largest open access publishers, and they were telling me that their growth rate had gone down from 50% to a much lower rate. And they were not associated with any large publisher, and they attributed that to the fact that the traditional publishers had really ramped up their open access initiatives. And I think what you're seeing is definitely a maturing now with open access, and it may even go on pause for a few years while the funders work out what's going on before it goes through further volume growth. But, you know, data-driven models is the key. So our integration with RightsLink, for example, it's all driven off of standards so that publishers can modify business models with a very in an agile manner. And so that agility to change is key.
Right. Agility and it sounds like Boy Scouts here, but cleanliness. It's all about making sure that the information that's being transmitted, because there's so many people that need to receive it, it has to be clean. That data has to be in the best shape it can be, to speaking as a non-data person.
Yeah, be prepared, you know.
Exactly.
I was talking with Josh in the break, and we're both noticing that publishers are this close to requiring ORCID for manuscript submission. And that initially will probably be just for the contributing author, but also you've got all of the co-authors. So I think publishers are now seeing the value of good hygiene, as you call it.
Indeed. Helen Sun from Beijing Ingenta. You see things from the perspective of Beijing, where there have been a variety of mandates issued by the Chinese government sort of supporting open access models. And yet in the Chinese environment, the researchers, they have their native, their domestic publishing world, but they also look out at the world beyond that and look to be published in all the journals that we would recognize. Talk about how that all works out, how the Chinese publishing world is resolving that to develop its own products, but also to work with and to submit and find their work published in other around the world.
Okay, because I work as a professor as well as working as a third-party supplier to the whole industry as a technical supplier. And I think over the past years, the Chinese academias are trying to submit to international journals because we got the points for everything we submit. And if you submit to a journal SCI or SSCI listed, then you got more points than if you submit to a Chinese journal. So obviously for academia, it make all worthwhile to submit, try to submit to more international journals. But on the other hand, Chinese governments are investing heavily into this digital transmission of the industry. They don't really have a special sponsorship for open access, but then overall we have 5 billion RMB, which is 500 million pounds every year as a sponsorship from the government into the cultural industry. And most of the projects they sponsor are related to digital content. And for example, two projects we have been working on over the past year are one is the journal platform for China Science Journal Publishing House, which is the largest science publisher in China. And the other one is we work for a China Asian Chinese kind of collection platform. And all of them are open access kind of business. So I can't say that particularly they would do something about open access, but as a whole, the whole country is quite investing heavily onto the whole digitization and all the new models that could be provided.
Right. Well, that seems to make sense because we were spoken about we need to look at the past and look ahead and think about what we're going to add.
Yes.
And so by creating these platforms that have an openness to open access is a wise move, it seems.
Yeah. Well, yes, I think, you know, if we look ahead, then the market is big, and we built the largest publication import and export platform for CNPIEC. So Mr. Ling is my key customer. And as we said during our previous conversation, I think to cover such a big country, you do need to have a partner who have a big coverage, because China is no any smaller than America, and it's new. It's all new. There's nothing which, you know, many people know about. So I think a partner is important, and that's why I strongly recommend Mr. Lin to come to this session, because everybody is interested, he can talk about CNPIEC, and they have been working with more than 10,000 libraries in China, and that's the main users for open access research content.
Right.
So,
that really is the challenge of this global environment we have. There's so many journals to work with, so many different platforms, and we've been hearing about the need for standards. And and I guess, Agnès Henri, for you at EDP, when it comes to ROI, it's not about getting the numbers right, but it's also about communicating the story of the value of publishing in this new environment. If stuff is free, people think, well, it didn't really cost so much to create it in the first place.
Yes, especially in France, there is a big movement against publishers, and they also feeling that we don't have any added value. So it's a great deal to explain to them all the work which is done. And so also it's difficult for them to pay open access because it's not organized like in UK, or you have the university who managed the fee for the author. In France, each author has to deal with his own money from the laboratory and so on. So they don't want to pay and promote gold open access, so, and don't understand why they have to pay to publish. So it's a lot of work to explain all that to them.
Right, so it's a communications problem. You can understand how it's a challenge to get them to part with their money, but by offering a variety of services, by creating that platform that you've created at EDP Open, that begins to answer that.
Yes, it's one of our role is also to standardize the things, to offer more tools to the author to find a way to to publish in open access.
Mm-hmm. Josh Dell, you've done a lot of traveling for your job. You were just in China. You've done some work in Latin America as well. I wonder if you can respond to what you've heard from Helen and from Sean and from Agnes about the challenges of this global wave that we're seeing in open access and the kind of particularly the push-pull environment, not just in China, but many parts of the world where researchers want to see their work in some of the leading journals, but there's also work being done at home on creating a publishing community there.
Yeah, and I think that's an important aspect, is that there's certainly work that you want to distribute that has broad application to the wider world, and in a lot of cases, there's a reason that they want to submit to an international publication, because there's already a built audience around that brand, around that journal, that can help kind of distribute the research and really help the research community as a whole. But there's also content that's very much more regionally focused, might be in language, it might be in Chinese, for example. There's significantly more journals in Chinese. I think the last count was around 5,000 or so, but 5,000 Chinese language journals and that's a lot of content that they also want to make sure is open and available to other researchers in China. There's significant growth in researchers coming out of programs. So that's in terms of open access, kind of the core tenet of it is make it open so that others can benefit and kind of move the entire community forward. I mean, I think from a regional perspective, that's open access as a way of letting other researchers in the country, whether it's in language, regional only content, or whether it has broader application, is something that I, through some of the travels, was an important point that I heard often.
All right. Well, thank you, Josh Dahl with Thomson Reuters. And before we get to our questions, I want to end by turning to our guest from China, from CPNIEC, Mr. Lin, excuse me, and ask you, you've had a chance to hear our discussions today and to perhaps reflect upon what's going to need to be done in China. And I'm curious about the Chinese language journals and the potential there, the platforms that you've worked with Helen on to create. What are the hopes that the Chinese publishing world has for the Chinese language journals as well as for the others that you are creating? Mm.
首先我非常感谢CCC 邀请来参加这次的论坛，因为我需要一个英文的翻译，就是我们的孙女士。
Thank you very much for the invitation to this panel. That's the first time CNPIEC joined CCC's event. And because my English is not very good, so it will be Helen who's helping with the interpreting.
应该说这个开放获取这个提出以后，在整个的中国的这个学术界，还有这个科技界，特别是在图书馆界，引起了巨大的一个反响。
I need to say that after the concept of open access was raised, it has got a big influence on the researchers in China, the libraries in China, and also the users of the libraries in China.
特别是图书馆界，近年来每年都会有关于开放获取的一个专项的一些论坛。
Especially on the library market we are working on, every year the whole library society in China have many meetings and conferences on open access every year.
得出的结论呢，跟这个题目是一样的。
And the conclusions of all those conferences just meet with your topic here.
就是说开放获取将是未来的一个重要的一个趋势，也是这个。 应该也是说下一个学术的一个资源的一个浪潮。
And their conclusion is open access is definitely the trend and the direction of the whole society and the next wave as your topic.
Right, right.
刚才 Helen 也介绍了，就是中国这个政府虽然没有现在还没有出台一个专门的一个 open access 的一个政策，但是确实中国政府一直在支持。 这一项的开放获取的这种形式，因为很多的中国的研究所，还有这个大学，所有的科研，大多的经费都来源于国家的经费的支持，所以国家也是特别希望这些成果能够得到更多的应用。
As Helen has explained, though we haven't set up a special policy for open access from the Chinese government yet, but the investment and sponsorship from the government is heavy because most of the research projects in China are sponsored by the government, and obviously the government would want a broader society to share the result and achievements of those projects. So in the recent years, we can see the sponsorship into this area are quite heavy from the government.
应该说一个非常重要的事件就是去年的五月份，中国科学院和中国自然科学基金委他们共同倡议，就所有由他们国家支持的这一方面的成果，在12个月之内必须。
A very important remark is last year in May, and a great announcement from China Academy and the Natural Science Funding, which is the largest nature science funding. They jointly announced that all the projects they sponsored have to be available open access within 12 months after it's published.
Right, I remember that announcement. It really made things it changed things from being UK, US, a bit of Europe to now suddenly this is really a global issue. I want to thank you, Mr. Lin, for that. Thank you, Xie, for that. And now I want to turn to our audience here because it's important to get questions from them. And we've been hearing about the role of funders, and we happen to have joining us again a man who was part of the town meeting last year, Ralph Schimmer from the Max Planck Foundation. And Ralph, it's good to see you. And we heard it said, Richard Wynn particularly was making the point that as we move forward in the open access environment, the funders are going to have a greater role, and publishers are going to be looking to them as a really important customer in all of this. How do you respond to that?
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity for the others. I was warned that I would be brought in, so I could prepare a little bit. In fact, I think this is a very good question, because what can be added to the discussion, how it went so far, is so far it was the concentration. The questions were asked to the service providers and the publisher world, but there's the other side, so the customer side, the author side, and the research funders and research organizations who have the responsibility for those authors. And when we talk about the transition phase, when we talk about the standards, we see that it does not end with the workflow system at the publishers. It has to connect also with the workflow systems in the institution, in particularly in the libraries. So in the end, we need a robust, scalable, efficient, cost-effective system where the process where the papers and eventually also the invoices can be processed and generated, not only in the publishing systems as they are organized by the on the publisher side, but they also have to be transmitted to the institution side. And the big risk moment is, as Agnes described, that authors are left alone in this universe, not knowing how to address further process the invoice in their institution. I mean, this would not be cost effective, and it would be an escape from the responsibility of the institutions. And so therefore, this is the other side of the inevitable other side of the process that we have to establish if we take the transition serious, if we believe that open access is going to be a dominant reality in the not-too-far future.
Right. Well, I think that's the point here of having this discussion, is to bring the parties together and to understand common interests and the benefit of working together. So Ralph Schimmer from Max Planck, I want to thank you for that. Ask you if you have questions here from the audience. Anyone at all with a question? Yes, please. Tell us who you are and who the question's for.
I'm Anke de Loper of John Benjamin's publishing company in the Netherlands. We publish mainly in linguistics, and I know exactly what the next way for our authors is, because on Monday morning in one of the Dutch national newspapers, it announced linguists are doing it for themselves. They have decided they no longer need publishers. They are supported by the Dutch government and the Dutch Science Foundation, and they have decided that fair open access means that publishers should give the journals to the editors, the scholars, and that the maximum acceptable publication charge would be €400 for an article, and actually I would like to know if any of the panel think that that would be a workable situation, because it's great to hear that there are revenue opportunities, but under these conditions, I actually do not see them.
Well, what's interesting about that, and thank you for the good question, because it points to the fact that open access, we mean a lot of different things by that phrase, and we often think about it in the world of STM, in the world of life sciences, and the grants that are supporting that kind of research. But there are open access journals across the various fields of academia. So linguistics doesn't have that kind of funding source, and so they would be driven in that direction, and that's really understandable. And I know, Agnes, you've seen that in France as well.
Yes, and I can answer that. Yes, of course, not. €400 is not suitable for us. After, we are a service provider. So if they ask services for €400, they will not have the same services. You can don't have to pay less and offer more. So you can, I say in French, you cannot ask to have a Rolls Royce and give the money for a small car. So it will be the challenge. If you want to for €400, okay, we have to work, but we don't. We offer you the same services. It's not possible.
Right. And Randy, I would suppose you'd see it that way, too, that there are services and there are services. And really, the authors will have choice as well. So the services that will be offered have to be not only really quality services, but priced right as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back also to information and what's the value of an author, and they are a customer to you. And I suspect what you'll see are tiers of concierge sort of services. And each one of those will come with different fees. It's one of the models that will have to be explored. But I think another important thing is one size won't fit all. If you're talking about the sort of content that was mentioned by involving John Benjamin's, that's a different thing than the sort of funding you'll get for some of the scientific content. So one size fits all, as nice as it would be, I don't think is realistic.
Right. Babis, you had a point to add to that?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think if you look at it, open access, as I said earlier, is just the manifestation of the bigger transformations that's taking place. And what our friend told us a minute ago is simply another manifestation of what's going on. It is not a matter of whether the model is valid for everything, because I don't think it is. I don't think that all publishers do the same job, that all journals are equal, and there is value that is added in the processing. I was a researcher myself, an author.
A PhD in mathematics, I understand.
Applied, yes.
Applied mathematics. Yeah. Important
with some value. You know, a lot of people will think in a similar way and say, okay, well, we are going to the funding agencies to take the money to do the research. We are the ones who write the papers. We are the ones who review the papers. What do you do? And I think that's a little bit of a simplistic view of what is happening, and it is responsibility of the publishing industry to explain what's the value add. But it's also another aspect of it that I wanted to mention was that publishers themselves, some publishers that realize that morph themselves more into this kind of services that societies or the broader research community would need in order to disseminate the research without losing quality.
Right, and Josh Dahl, I imagine you see it just like that too.
Yeah, and I think one of the things too about your point is that the opportunity per se, it's very different for different types of publishers. And so you've got the large commercial publishers, but you've got association publishers that are serving a cause, and they have a community that they're trying to serve and give information to. And so that's a very different type of sorts of challenges and benefits for open access, moving towards open access. And so I think also, you have to look at the different type of publisher. So I think if you're thinking just of commercial publisher, when you're thinking about the ROI or the relationship with the funder, it's also each of the different publishing stakeholders has different motivations.
Right. I want to thank our panel, Agnes Henri, Josh Dahl, Sean Harris, Randy Petway, Richard Wynn, Haramalis Marmanis, Helen Sun, and Mr. Chen Lin, thank you all very much, and a warm thank you for everything you gave us. Thank you.